Welcome to the May 2026 News Bulletin podcast for yacht and small craft marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear member and fellow industry professionals, recently I attended the annual Certifying Authority BCC meeting at the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency in Southampton, which drew about 40 attendees. All the UK certifying authorities and the recognised organisations were represented and present. We were joined by senior and key MCA personnel and others from the Jersey and Cayman Islands registries. For the large part, it was business as usual as the regulator announced new initiatives, interpretations and to give a general news update on a series of policies and ongoing work behind the scenes. But midway through the meeting, a comment was made by the code lead in his presentation about the Workboat Edition 3 code in relation to a recently circulated urgent MCA press release. I could not let this go unchallenged. The code, which was first introduced in December 2023, becomes mandatory in December 2026, meaning all under 24 meters workboats must be compliant with the new regulations to continue operating. Apparently, a number of vessel owners operators have yet to transition to meet the new code requirements, hence why the press release was issued. I directly asked two of the certifying authorities present, who are responsible for a large number of workboats between them, just how serious the issue was. Both responded by saying that somewhere in the order of 80% have yet to do what is required to meet the requirements of the code. Yes, a staggering 80%, and there are only 8 months left to the deadline. It already seems clear that certifying authorities do not have the surveyor capacity and administrative manpower to get all vessel owners operators where they need to be to meet the deadline. So, the message to surveyors who look after commercially coded workboats and vessel owners operators is act now, and even if you do, it may already be almost too late. All of this presents a conundrum for the MCA on the face of it, there is no grace period and no extension possible at this time. But if that renders hundreds of commercial vessels suspended and unable to operate, the results could be catastrophic. Let's see what develops. This scenario leads me on to a related matter going forward which needs mentioning and thinking about now. The MCA's Sport or Pleasure Vessel Code, launched in December 2025, also has a 3-year window of opportunity for under 24 meters vessels to meet the new regulations by December 2028. But unlike the workboat fleet, the number of sport and pleasure vessels is considerably bigger. So, the best advice is plan now and get ahead of the curve or prepare for the likely similar consequences further down the track. Rarely is IIAMS invited to make a competitive pitch for a commercial contract, but it happened recently. The Royal National Lifeboat Institution fleet is to be coded for the first time in their 200-year history. As a consequence, IIAMS was invited to submit a bid for the 5-year contract. The timeline was short and I believe our bid was of the highest order, not only commercially viable, but also meeting the stringent technical requirements that were asked for as part of the submission. I'd like to publicly recognise the significant work carried out by Fraser Noble, our certifying authority chair, who went above and beyond with his time and document preparation to assist me. Sadly, on this occasion, we were not chosen and I understand the contract has been awarded to another organisation. Let me talk numbers with you for a moment. Numbers and statistics reveal lots. They can be used to explain the success of an activity, or conversely, the severity of a crisis perhaps. Where would we be without numbers? So, I was particularly interested to read a report about the number of global port state control inspections conducted in 2025 and the resulting deficiencies and detentions. I am not quite sure what number I was expecting to see, but I was shocked. The report revealed that in 2025, port state control inspections showed a rising trend, with approximately 75,168 inspections conducted worldwide, leading to 177,741 deficiencies in total and 2,569 detentions. I have no historical data to compare these figures against, but the volume of deficiencies seems vast. Anyone not related with or invested in the maritime industry would surely be shocked and concerned at these statistics. So, what are the most common offending issues? It seems the main issues have not altered, they just keep being repeated. Fire safety systems, SOLIS 2-2, are a big one and accounted for 17% of all deficiencies. Inspections found faulty alarms, inoperative fire pumps and missing maintenance records. Life-saving appliances, SOLIS 3, 10% of findings. Typical deficiencies included damaged lifeboats, expired pyrotechnics, and untested launching systems. And that old chestnut, the ISM code implementation, SOLIS 9, which revealed recurring non-conformities in drills, SMS execution, and crew familiarization. On that somber note, and before I leave you, I would like to send my personal congratulations to IAMS President, Captain Ruchin Dale, who was recently recognized for his contribution to maritime excellence when he was presented with a special award at the 63rd National Maritime Day celebration. I bid you farewell until next month. For our first report of this podcast, we have a new handy guide out. Becoming an expert witness can be a daunting prospect but lucrative activity. Standing up in a packed courtroom to give your evidence, even if you are confident that you know your subject inside out, is still a challenge, especially the first time, and in what can be intense surroundings in the court. Being prepared for every eventuality is essential, and that is the aim of what a marine surveyor needs to know about becoming an expert witness. Author Peter Broad is experienced in giving expert witness in court and is a seasoned veteran, making him perfectly placed to write this handy guide. This handy guide focuses on the unique legal responsibilities of marine surveyors and consultants acting as expert witnesses. It covers the full process from initial engagement and evidence assessment to courtroom testimony, preparing consultants to deliver clear, credible, and independent technical opinions that meet legal standards. The areas covered in this handy guide will provide you with an introduction to the following. What is the role of the expert witness? The legal obligations and procedural guidelines for experts. Writing structured and defensible expert reports. The different communication techniques required for court and arbitration appearances. The ethical standards relevant to impartiality, independence, and conflicts of interest. Important note, the information contained in this handy guide, whilst predominantly related to English law and legal concepts, still provides invaluable advice for those operating globally in different jurisdictions as an expert witness. The principles of giving expert witness are similar. For more information, visit www.iams.org.uk. Next, marine guidance notes are free publications from the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency providing essential guidance, safety recommendations, and best practices for complying with merchant shipping regulations. Unlike mandatory merchant shipping notices, MGNs offer non-mandatory guidance on interpreting safety regulations, though they are crucial for safety compliance. And there are dozens of them. Recently, a senior member informed IAMS of his frustration at not being able to search for an MCA document on the UK government's website. He explained that all the marine guidance notices are displayed there, but he had to trawl through dozens to find the one he was looking for. He challenged IAMS to come up with a solution, and the Institute has done so. All the MGNs are now listed on the IAMS website, and there is a free text search box, meaning users can drill down quickly to find the document they need. Try a search now on the IAMS website at www.iams.org.uk/marine-guidance-notices. For our next segment, we're highlighting Consultation, a review of UK Maritime Spectrum licenses. This consultation sets out Ofcom's proposals to update some of their rules on spectrum use by the maritime sector to implement international decisions and simplify some of our licenses. The primary purpose of maritime radio communications is to ensure safety at sea. It enables vessels to share their position, identify other vessels, navigate and coordinate operations. It also supports the reporting of weather conditions, distress alerts, emergency situations and other communications. Ofcom manages spectrum to prevent harmful interference, including to safeguard the reliability of maritime radio communications on board UK-registered vessels and within UK waters and territorial seas. The proposals in this consultation aim to ensure that the UK Maritime Spectrum Authorisation Framework remains fit for purpose, supports technological developments, and continues to promote the safe, efficient use of radio communications at sea. We are also seeking input from stakeholders on the future spectrum needs for maritime radio communications, including for VHF data exchange systems and autonomous vessels, to ensure our work program continues to support growth and innovation in the maritime sector. The consultation is open until the 3rd of June 2026. To have your say, go to ofcom.org.uk. Up next, Ancaster Group, one of Europe's leading yacht brokerage and new boat distribution companies, has announced that founder Nick Griffith has sold a majority shareholding in the business to Ancaster franchise owner Matthew Shea for an undisclosed sum. Based in Southampton, UK, Ancaster Group employs 103 people and generates an annual turnover exceeding £50 million. The group encompasses a portfolio of specialist marine companies, including Ancaster International Boat Sales, San Lorenzo Yachts UK, PB Europe, Ancaster Yacht Services, Spencer Rigging, and Advanced Rigging and Hydraulics. With operations spanning 22 offices across Europe, Ancaster is recognized as one of the region's leading yacht brokerage and new boat distribution groups. The company represents globally renowned power and sail brands and offers a comprehensive range of services, including sales, distribution, refit, rigging, and after-sales support. Following the transaction, Matthew Shave will assume the role of CEO, leading the company through its next phase of growth. Nick Griffith will transition to chairman, focusing on strategic oversight and supporting the executive team. For our next segment, a new, peer-reviewed study conducted by University College London's Department of Mechanical Engineering in collaboration with RAD, a UK-based electric marine propulsion company, examined underwater radiated noise across a range of operating speeds, comparing electric and conventional boats. Their aim? To discover if electric boats really are quieter. A comparative study of underwater radiated noise from electric and conventional boats has been published in the Journal of the Acoustical Society of America. It was conducted by UCL's Department of Mechanical Engineering in collaboration with RAD. The authors set out to quantify the noise made by electric vessels and scientifically test the commonly held assumption that they are quieter than their combustion counterparts. While their engines are generally quieter to human ears, for example, electric vessels can produce significant underwater noise at higher frequencies, making them increasingly audible to species with good high-frequency hearing capabilities, including porpoises. Following initial measurements indicating lower electrical system noise across several frequency ranges, a second trial was conducted in a controlled lake environment near Shrewsbury. Two identical boats were tested over several days, one fitted with a RAD 40 and the other with a combustion engine of the same output. Data collection included acoustic measurements from two hydrophones, high-speed underwater video and airborne noise readings. Tests were conducted on the boats at speeds ranging from 4 to 20 knots. The study reports a reduction of 43 decibels at 4 knots when comparing the electric vessel with the combustion engine vessel. Lower broadband noise levels were also recorded for the electric system across the full speed range tested. The findings attribute differences in noise output to the absence of combustion processes and associated exhaust discharge in electric propulsion systems. The research notes that electric propulsion, therefore, offers advantages for species sensitive to low-frequency noise. For species with stronger high-frequency hearing capabilities, such as Odontocetae cetaceans and pinnipeds, managing cavitation noise at higher speeds remains an important consideration for both propulsion types. You can download the study via our website. Next, at the beginning of 2025, the Norwegian Maritime Authority announced smaller cargo ships, passenger ships and fishing vessels would face increased supervision of their safety management systems. A total of 34 audits were carried out with 154 non-conformities issued, four of them serious. This group of vessels were chosen to help guide customers to put in place a safety management system that works on board. The authority stated the goal is for those on board to be safe and avoid accidents. A safety management system must be easy to use, it should not be too extensive or detailed, and the entire crew must receive training. Some of the customers that the Norwegian Maritime Authority inspected did not have a safety management system on board at all. Others had created their own system, but it did not meet the requirements of the regulations, while a third example had purchased a system from a supplier, but it was not adapted to the operation. In the same year, 134 unannounced inspections were also carried out on cargo ships under 500 gross tons that do not have ISM requirements. The number of detained ships in 2025 was 29, compared to 24 in 2024. Of the findings, deficiencies in the safety management system are at the top, closely followed by life-saving equipment and fire prevention measures. You can find out more by visiting the news page of our website. In our next story, Simon Fraser University researchers have uncovered concerning fiberglass contamination in a key estuary on Vancouver Island, raising concerns about how an as-yet-overlooked contaminant could affect aquatic birds, marine life and coastal communities that rely on shellfish and seafood. A new SFU study found fiberglass particles buried in the sediment and biofilm layers of the Cowichan Estuary, a 400-hectare intertidal ecosystem used by the Cowichan Tribe's First Nations for generations. Among the key findings, the study said fiberglass particles were detected at 96% of the sediment testing stations in 2023, up from 64% in 2020. And higher fiberglass concentrations in both biofilm and sediment were found at marinas, slipways and boat maintenance areas where sanding, repairs and hull cleaning are common. In addition to coastal industrial sites, the study found abandoned and deteriorating boats and marine infrastructure are a persistent, unmanaged source of microfiberglass, like the way derelict vessels contribute to microplastic pollution. Boat hulls and other marine infrastructure often use fiberglass-reinforced plastic, fine glass fibers embedded in plastic resins. As boats are sanded, repaired, abandoned or left to decay, those fibers break down into tiny, needle-like fragments. Find out more, including the study's recommendations at www.sfu.ca. In our next story, inconsistent leadership and variable safety priorities, along with indications that formal procedures are not always followed, are creating avoidable risks across the yacht sector. Additionally, current levels of crew engagement mean that opportunities to recognize and respond to both perceived and emerging risks are not being fully realized on board. These are findings from Lloyd's Register's Yacht Safety Culture and Wellbeing Survey, which gathered input from crew and shore-based professionals working across a broad range of yacht sizes, all over 24 meters, and operating models. The survey indicates that although safety-critical rules, checklists, and safety meetings are in place, their effectiveness is frequently diminished by financial, operational, and guest-driven pressures, as well as by crewing levels and workload demands. Process and procedures, along with communication, were identified as relative strengths underpinning safety culture on board. Crew generally understand basic risk principles and say that well-run safety meetings help them work more safely. However, the survey highlights significant variation between yachts in how consistently these practices are applied. Engagement emerged as a critical area requiring attention to strengthen reporting culture, trust, and safety performance. Respondents conveyed low confidence in reporting, challenging decisions, and speaking up without fear of negative consequences. Engagement is notably lower on yachts under 500 gross tons and among long-tenured crew, who report declining trust in follow-through related to safety observations and improvement suggestions. On smaller yachts in particular, unclear roles and responsibility were seen to weaken accountability and make it harder for crew to raise concerns. You can download the full report at lr.org. Up next, owner and organizer of the Dubai International Boat Show, Dubai World Trade Center, has postponed the event until later this year. The event was originally due to take place between the 8th and 12th of April, and the announcement came following the conflict in the Middle East. In a Facebook post, a statement said, "Dubai International Boat Show have announced the rescheduling of the April edition to the 25th to the 29th of November 2026 at Dubai Harbor. The revised dates align the event with the start of the Middle East's prime boating season, creating stronger market conditions for launches, sales and international participation. The November edition will also mark the permanent repositioning of the Dubai International Boat Show to the November calendar annually, reinforcing Dubai and the UAE's role as a strategic regional hub for the marine leisure industry. For our next report, the Nautic Forum will be held in Saint-Malo, France on 28th and the 29th of May 2026. A number of key players from the industry and the regions have announced their attendance. And the topics they will be addressing are indicative of the changes to come in the nautical industry. The event brings together decision makers from the public sector, industry and the nautical sector to discuss the question of how uses and infrastructures will evolve by 2035. The forum provides an insight into future boating usage. Pleasure boating is evolving, with more occasional practices, an increase in rental and a diversification in the types of craft used. New generations are approaching boating differently, less focused on ownership, more on experience. This has a direct influence not only on boat design, but also on the organization of nautical bases. Discussions will focus on this balance, maintaining attractiveness while guaranteeing accessibility and limiting environmental impact. Ports remain a focal point. With berth saturation, boat turnover and changing services, port management is evolving. Port managers will have to adapt their models. Optimization of berths, development of onshore services, integration of new motorizations. For yacht owners, this means more complex access conditions but also changes in the services offered. In our next story, an apprentice at Banbury's historic Tooley's Boatyard in the UK has become one of the first people in the country to qualify as a Heritage Engineering Marine Technician, marking a nationally significant milestone in the safeguarding of endangered marine and inland waterway skills. Jacob Beek has successfully completed the Level 3 Heritage Engineering Marine Technician Apprenticeship, a new qualification created to address the critical loss of traditional boat building, dockyard, and marine engineering skills. His achievement places him among the very first cohort of just 3 apprentices nationally to complete the qualification and represents one of the earliest examples of the full heritage skills pathway being delivered successfully within a live working boatyard rather than a project or simulated training environment. Up next, the International Maritime Pilots Association has sent out a warning of the consequences of deregulation and competition in maritime pilotage. Maritime pilotage is a public, not commercial, service that exists for safety of navigation, protecting people, the environment and trade. IMPA said some jurisdictions are tempted by the idea that deregulation and competition deliver a better service at a lower cost. This is a mistake, and the evidence agrees. IMPA believes decision makers need to understand that deregulation and competition are not sound policies in pilotage and expose the public and the shipping industry to unnecessary and avoidable risk. Captain Simon Pelletier, president of IMPA, said, "Where deregulation and competition have been introduced, we see increasing costs, reductions in safety and efficiency. In the worst cases, we see systems that fail to adequately protect the public. To capture the economic, social and environmental benefits from maritime pilotage, governments must create the right environment. This is what the overwhelming majority of jurisdictions do. The few jurisdictions that have introduced deregulation and competition need to change course." Read IMPA's full article at imphq.org. In our next segment, the Canal and River Trust has announced plans for what it describes as a once-in-a-generation program of investment aimed at strengthening the long-term resilience of the canal network. Chief Executive Campbell Robb shared his direction for the charity with staff and volunteers, setting out proposals that would see increased spending on the waterways alongside a new financial approach designed to secure the network's future. The strategy, which will be developed and consulted on over the coming months, focuses on tackling underlying structural issues across the aging canal system while embedding waterways more firmly into community life and national infrastructure. The Trust says the program will prioritize major maintenance work and address long-standing and complex projects across the network. For boaters, this is expected to mean continued investment in navigation and improvements to infrastructure that has become increasingly costly to maintain. The organization believes addressing core structural challenges now will bring longer-term savings and help attract new commercial partnerships and fundraising opportunities. For our next report, 4 crew members had to be rescued after uncontrolled flooding on prawn trawler Freedom 2 caused the vessel to founder and later sink off the Scottish coast. The MAIB received 230 reports of flooding of fishing vessels between 2013 and 2022, of which 34% resulted in the loss of the vessel. The data indicates flooding remains a significant safety issue. At 15:35 on the 21st of February 2024, the 15.94 metres prawn trawler Freedom 2 foundered and sank to the east of the Garvellach Islands in the Firth of Lorne off the west coast of Scotland. Freedom 2 had suffered an uncontrolled flood into the engine room. The crew were initially alerted to the flood by the activation of the bilge alarms but did not isolate any seacocks as they believed that the flood was due to a failed stern seal. The flood, likely caused by the failure of a seawater pipe, overwhelmed the available bilge pumps and passed into the fish hold. The skipper and a deckhand tried to deal with the flood while Freedom 2 was taken under tow by an RNLI lifeboat. The tow was abandoned when it became apparent that the vessel was sinking, and the skipper and the deckhand swam clear of the vessel as it foundered. They were recovered from the water by the lifeboat's crew. Safety issues include the following. The vessel foundered due to a progressive flood into the engine room. The exact source of the flood could not be identified. The most likely cause was a vibration-induced fracture of the seawater suction pipe for the deck wash pump. The rate of flooding overwhelmed the operational bilge pumps and additional pumps either failed or could not be used due to power supply issues. The salvage pump from the lifeboat was not used. The skipper was proactive in ensuring that the crew was safe and managed to raise the alarm in an area of poor signal coverage. You can download the full report via iams.org.uk. Up next, the French Electric Boat Association has elected Michel Navé as its new president at its latest General Assembly, succeeding Yannick Willevaux, who will remain on the board of directors with responsibility for partner relations. Navé, head of eNav Systems, brings more than 7 years' experience in the integration of electric propulsion systems. His appointment comes as the association continues to position itself within the development of electric and hybrid marine technologies. During his tenure, Willevo led efforts to expand the AFBE's profile and strengthen its role in promoting electric propulsion and sustainable navigation solutions within the sector. Commenting on his appointment, Nave said, "In a context where the electrification of all uses is becoming a strategic issue in terms of economic sovereignty and the reduction of greenhouse gases, the maritime sector is responsible for as many GHG emissions as the aviation sector, 3% each worldwide, and its electrification, hybridization constitutes an essential lever to meet the rise in regulatory and climate requirements." And for our last story, San Lorenzo has confirmed a leadership transition at its Nortor, Swan and Bluegame business units, with changes scheduled to begin in June 2026. Giangido Garotti will become CEO of Nortor, Swan and Bluegame. He currently serves as deputy CEO of Group Beneteau and CEO of its boating division. His decision to resign from the French boating giant was confirmed in January 2026. Nortor, Swan and Bluegame will continue to operate as separate brands within the San Lorenzo portfolio. Girotti will report to Executive Chairman Massimo Perotti and oversee brand operations and associated services across both business units. Tommaso Vincenzi will continue to lead San Lorenzo's yacht and superyacht business units. Carla De Maria, former CEO of Bluegame, will step back from executive responsibilities and take on the role of advisor to the chairman. She will remain on the San Lorenzo board. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.